Good evening, good night, good morning, and good afternoon, depending on when you listen to this, or better yet, where you're watching it from. We are back on the airwaves. It is Tristan Sean Gregson here with the Eck. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm alright. That was a weird intro.
Oh, it was just reminding me of...
very clunky.
Recently, you were mentioned many a times on Friends of the Podcast, The Third Power.
Oh.
They did their Born of the Gods set review, and Usman liked many of your feelings and thoughts on things.
Well, that's good. Usman and I are kind of kindred spirits.
Yeah, you guys really...
similar music taste.
Really enjoy death metal. Really love cats. You guys...
like
you actually hate cats. That's the inside joke for no one. But,
literal no one.
Way to ruin it for literal no one. So tonight on the Magic Box, we obviously have a lot to catch up on in the Magic the Gathering cube-related world.
Just the Magic the Gathering world in there. I mean,
yeah, we don't cover that world. That's not our world.
We don't care about the...
we don't
the
live in that world. I don't want to watch Mono Blue Devotion.
In fact, there's been a Pro Tour.
Battle against Mono Black... okay, alright, I will stop for a second and say that the Pro Tour was, very entertaining. And there were definitely times when I was watching people play matches in the future that felt like good cube matches. I did feel that way.
So. I was a big fan of the coverage. I think it was well done this year. I like the change to the top 8 so you see all the matches. I got to watch a couple of them. It was like 4 in the morning, so I had to go to bed. But like, if it were at a more reasonable hour, I would definitely have watched more of it.
To be good evening, depending on your time zone. To be perfectly honest about Pro Tour coverage, since we'll just dive headlong into that tangent. Yes, the game has been upped. Yes, it's better than the previous year, which had already been a huge benchmark for coverage. I just think that commentary and kind of like flow of content needs to, really, that's where the next big leap needs to come, because as much as I love Marshall, he never knows what's going on, and it's borderline embarrassing at this point.
Marshall and, like, I specifically remember they were showing the Matthias Hunt, the Amulet of Vigor Pact deck.
Oh, well, that everyone screwed up on that
well,
one.
Well, no, so he had, cast multiple pacts, so
the guys in the booth added up the Pathmech draw, right?
Yeah, well, he was like, he scooped, I don't understand, he needed,
but that was the cost
of the pacts.
I mean, the interesting thing is it's like, you know, when you get someone like Kibler in there, you get Luis in there, those guys know the game inside and out, up and down, all the plays, all the cards, you know, 99% of the angles.
Weird audio desync at the moment.
That I can't help you with. You're just going to stop the stream.
That's fine.
Okay. Well, on the audio side of this broadcast, nothing will have changed, hopefully.
Right.
Anyway, so to summarize this thought, the pro players are the best by a mile. Then you kind of get into the league where I like to be like, you know, BDM and, you know, Randy Bueller are good in their own respects. Like, Randy Bueller knows Magic inside and out 10-plus years ago.
Yes.
If there was going to be a Legacy GP that needed coverage, you get Randy Bueller. He's going to know a lot of the cards. Marshall's been playing Magic for, like, 3.5 years, so he's constantly at a disadvantage of just, you know, knowing everything that's going on. And he works really hard at it. I mean, obviously, he's come a long way. And in that short of time, I think, you know, if you give that up to 99.9% of the population that plays Magic, they wouldn't be able to do it. But this is the biggest stage with a game that is just growing exponentially. You need to up it. But I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to slowly ride that wave. It's just, just going
to
happen.
Well, so. I mean, I think the point is that I think they want it to be really approachable to some degree. So they don't want it to be too...
but like every time there's something confusing during coverage, and every time someone who's supposed to be the voice of reason and the voice of understanding,
It just collapses on itself.
Yeah, it's terrible. Like that's way worse for you know, approachability for new players. Maybe the game is growing too much at this point. Who knows? I'm gonna digress from that because
anyway. That's
not where we're not here to poke holes in Pro Tour coverage and how we could do it better.
We're here to talk about cube and cube drafts and cube products like conspiracy.
Oh, was that even on our list? I don't even think that was on the show notes list.
No.
No.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, well, we'll just talk about it right off the bat here, I guess. MTG Conspiracy, also known as Two Magic Cards and Endless Hopes and Dreams. One Magic card, which we will definitely be cubing with. It's funny, actually, how many times people asked, is Clockwork Librarian going to go in the cube? Obviously, people that ask this question have not cubed much, because, yes, it's going to go in the cube. Human beings... make the randomization that is Cube. Sorting machines and print racks don't. So oftentimes things end up being skewed, and packs are going to be off by colors. And Clockwork Librarian would be a card that would actually just by itself kind of smooth out drafts. But it goes even deeper than that, because this card actually has strategic implications to the draft process, which is...
Like, you take it early and you could double up. Like, I think it allows...
I mean, I don't think you're going to... I mean, I guess you get the chance to take it late, but I don't really think you get a chance to take it late. I think that this card gets taken pretty early. The first time you blank a pack or there isn't something like top tier for your strategy.
It definitely allows you to play, I think, more narrow decks.
Or try to draft combo.
Like to try and draft combo or more narrow strategies. Like, yeah. It gives you like another shot. So when you see the pack that has the reanimate and the exhume in it, you're not like, God, I have to take one of these.
You happen to be the guy that opens the 7-card green pack and you're playing like white-blue control.
Right.
And you're like, wow, it's just a Jund pack.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Anyway.
So. I also like, so I like this guy. I think he's sort of interesting. I think it'll be interesting if we see more stuff like this, you know.
I think there's only so much room for draft shenanigans in this set. You know, obviously everyone that loses their fucking breakfast when they see this card thinks that the sky's the limit as far as fucking with the draft process, but...
I'm not saying the sky is the limit or that there's going to be like a million cards like this, but like, so the biggest problem with Clockwork Librarian is it's a hill giant. Right?
Its problem?
It's not like the world on fire as a card.
I think its problem is that it's common. And since it's common, and you're going to be drafting this set, this effect will not be anywhere close to duplicated in the rest of the set, I guarantee you.
There's just gonna be a ton of these floating around?
Yeah, think about it. This set's like 200 cards, you're gonna draft it with 6 or 8 people?
For cube.
Oh, we put in the cube, it's gonna be awesome.
Okay. My problem with this card for Cube is that it is a fucking hill giant, and no one is going to play it.
Oh, you mean the
card itself.
You mean the problem with the card is that it, for some reason, has other text on it?
Yes.
Eh.
Like, what my issue is that this card affects the draft, which is cool, and, like, changes the draft process, which is fine, but once you get out of that and into deck building, it's right in the pine, like, 99% of the time. You know? My wish was that they would have other things like this that would tweak with the draft format or whatever,
and
were slightly more playable.
And I'm putting money down that you will not see it.
Right, and I'm saying that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, this is such a huge leap forward by itself.
Yeah.
Like, why? I'm not going to complain about anything more. I think that, if anything, I'm like, man, we should find a way to put Metalworker in the cube, because that would be a way this card could be useful. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. I mean, yes, I think... Maybe in Pauper or Peasant cubes, this card is less exciting because the mean power level is
the
so...
The flatter the power curve is in your cube, the less exciting this is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the chance of rolling the dice and, like, hitting Double Box or Lotus Time Walk or something crazy in one pack, you don't get. But I think it's still fine. I think we'll make room for it. Artifacts are pretty soft right now anyway, so...
Yeah, again, the fact that this guy is common in this set, for everyone out there who's speculating that there's a bunch of stuff that's gonna get wacky with the draft format, I really feel like this is it, there's no more. Like, if this had been even uncommon, maybe you could give a shot for another uncommon or rare that somehow messed with the draft. Yeah. Like, if you opened a rare that was like, show it to everyone, now the direction of the draft changes for the rest of this pack.
Right. Like, we'll see.
Anyway, No complaints. Think that card's gonna be great.
Speaking of cards from Conspiracy, I actually like the Angel, Magister of Worth. It's a 4/4 for 6, white-black. So 4 white and a black. 4/4 flyer, and when it comes into play, now, this is obviously a very multiplayer-centric ability, Will of the Council, where everyone votes. But, in Heads Up, the way it works is, you can always vote for destroy all other creatures. And that's what happens if you tie, so no matter what, it'll happen. So, this basically is a 4/4 flyer for 6 that, when it comes into play, destroy all other creatures.
It's a better Sunblast Angel.
Or, like, Reaver Demon.
Okay, yeah. Sunblast Angel, because it was an angel. And same converted mana cost. It's a little, like, a little unhinged, where it's, like, It's a 6-6, or sorry, it's a 4-4 flyer for 6 that destroys all the creatures with the claws, raise your hand.
Yeah, you have to vote. You have to go, like, thumbs down.
Which is a perfectly reasonable card. I don't see this going in a lot of cubes. I mean,
I think it's good. I think it should.
I think it's not bad. I mean, in our cube, what do you want to cut for that card?
Probably... What's our white-black section look like right now?
Sin Collector, Obsidat, Blood Baron,
Man, all Sword. These cards are good.
Yeah, they're a lot better than the one you just named.
Maybe Ashen Rider?
Ashen Rider is it's the reanimate, it's the recurring nightmare tricks. It's like, it's the classic magic slot, like you want that in Q.
Yeah. I like this card though.
I like it too.
So anyway. That's the extent of conspiracy so far. I mean, we just don't have any more cards.
I think if we were going to theorize about it, I would say that it's going to involve a lot of stuff that isn't going to affect the format we play a lot. I know that...
As it's a multiplayer product, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's like...
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I think like we put this bug in people's ear last year about this whole like Wizards Make a Cube product thing. That even after, like, the official release statement about conspiracy...
They're like, people, so it's a cube?
People were still like, it's the Magic Cube, it's the cube set, it's the cube set. It's like, no, it's not the cube set, it's the Summer of Multiplayer product. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, you have no idea what Arch Enemy or Plane Chase are. They have very little to do with cube.
There are occasionally some hits out of those, though. You know, a lot of it is kind of, for 1v1 Magic, it's kind of chaff stuff, you know. Enchanted, like, what were those, like... The enchantments that, like, they can't attack you or whatever. Like, enchanted creature gets, like, +3/+3 and you or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, dorky, you know, tweak with the multiplayer stuff.
I mean, I think there will be more than just librarian from the set that will go in the cube.
Sure.
But I do not think it is going to be very centered around that at all. Well, I think we're going to see a lot more.
If that Will of the Council thing is, like, a regular mechanic for that, like, we'll see more of it. You know, as long as any of them have, like, a good downside of the tie, you know.
Maybe.
That, you know, you get some good ability triggers out of that. So
it is possible.
Yeah.
We don't want to steamroll past the way we open the show.
No.
Which is some picks, some scenarios. So pick one, pack one for today from the 700 card powered masterpiece that we draft with every week.
What do we got? That's so humble. alright, this week's Pick One Pack One contains the following. Momentary Blink, Burst Lightning, Day of Judgment, Ranger of Eos, Dreadbore, Troll Ascetic, Inquisition of Kozilek, Grizzly Salvage, Guardian Idol, Survival of the Fittest, Boros Charm, Karmic Guide, Bitter Blossom, Condemn, Intuition.
Okay, I feel like this pack is a bit of a plant in the... What's the status of Survival of the Fittest these days?
It's like a health... It's like a doctor checkup?
Yeah, it's like your yearly physical with Survival of the Fittest.
Yeah.
It's a card that it feels like over the years has slowly been devalued as far as cube drafters go. I think once a powerhouse of worldly tutoring abilities, not to mention the cornerstone of some of... the best green-based combos in cube history. Survival nowadays feels like it's pretty middle of the road.
I think part of the function of it is the game has sped up.
Okay.
So you don't have as much time to dick around with survival like you used to.
It's super efficiently costed, though, you'd think. Like,
yeah, but like having to pay 2 and then paying an additional mana for all your tutoring, like, it adds up. And... there are so many decks that are just not going to give you the time to do that. Like, Monorad's killing you on turn 5. Like, you don't have a ton of time to, like, dork around with survival. It's still very good, and I would still absolutely snap it out of this pack.
Oh, okay.
And so, build around it.
So you are clearly no contesting survival.
Yeah, no contest survival.
Let's see if I can contest you.
It's still one of the strongest build arounds. And it has a ton of support even if you were to just play Monogreen. In a deck like with Rephelos and Gaea's Cradle and things like that.
I mean, we're in the year 2014, which for our cube at least, and what we're gonna continue advocating is we're killing the Dirtle. It's the year of the death of the Dirtle. So we've lost some cute things like Spike Weavers and Spike Feeders and More of the kind of, like, derp around, maybe do something cool cards. But green still has a pretty strong arsenal that even if, again, if you're just playing mono green, like, obviously there are combos with this card that you can find yourself, you don't need us to tell you about.
You know, I like survival because, you know, it turns elves into bombs in the late game, in a way that nothing else really does. It allows you to play narrow things in your main deck, and not feel too bad about it, because you can always pitch them if they're not any good, you know. I feel a lot better about starting Viridian Shaman when I have survival.
Oh, I think in our cube, you're starting Viridian Shaman at least 51% of the time. But that again, here a little bit of hearsay in this scenario. So we're looking at survival, and then Bitter Blossom being a second, but a distant second in this pack.
I like survival. Or, I like Bitter Blossom. I mean, as we'll get to talking about later, the Rotisserie Cube draft.
Yeah.
I think survival is the better 2-mana enchantment out of this pack.
Offered here. I wish I had more of a counter-argument this week. Unfortunately...
I'm surprised you're not advocating intuition. That is your jam.
It is the only blue card in the pack.
Hey,
you have latched on to what I am about. But,
and the card intuition in general.
Yeah, I do. I feel like I advocate for intuition a lot more than a lot of other people, but Alphabet's down by the stream, so... Usman is here. You missed your shout-out from 12 minutes ago, Usman.
Yeah, we were hyping you up.
Talking about...
He'll get very excited about this in about a minute when he hears it.
Yeah. Alright, so, yeah. Survival of the Fittest still trumps the other 14 cards. It's still... The Survival of the Fittest barometer for 2014, still better than those cards.
Another build-around at least worth mentioning is Ranger of Eos. I think it's a pretty far back pick, but... one that doesn't see as much play as I think it should.
Well, it's funny. Ranger of Eos is not a card I would front load. I would not...
Really?
I wouldn't take it with the intention to get stuff for it.
I think that's, like, the best way to do it.
Oh, really? I go the other way around.
Yeah, because now you're extra valuing one drops because you know you can get value out of them.
I guess. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on to a scenario here.
Okay. So in our first scenario, we have four cards. We have Recurring Nightmare, Shriek Mop, Ancestral Recall, Dismember. The pack we are now past with 11 cards in it has the following cards. Mirren Crusader, Vithian Renegades, Yawgmoth's Bargain, Sublime Archangel, Colonian Hydra, Forbid, Complicate, Is It Key Rune, Avalanche Riders, Force Spike, Fire Blast. I think I know what you're gonna take.
Oh. Okay. I just can't get past that we somehow had a third pick Ancestral Recall.
These things do happen.
It reminds me of our draft this week, which was very unfortunate. I feel like I have to stop and talk about, let's talk about this. I don't even know the best way to put it. I really feel bad. We had a gentleman show up to our draft. He's an on and offer. He's not very consistent, but he comes. The gentleman by the name of Katim, he was in our draft, second pack. He opens up his pack, he takes a card, he passes the gentleman to his right, and the gentleman to his right proceeds to freak out because there is a particular card still in the pack known as Ancestral Recall, considered widely to be, like, the best card in Magic. 15 cards into a draft, you know, you're still kind of like, I can find a way to play this card.
Yeah.
The draft finishes, you know, Katim turns over his card pool, he happens to be playing, like, Bug Reanimator or something. Like, he could have definitely played the card.
He was playing blue. I mean, it was just a, you know.
So most of the people at the table kept asking him, like, why didn't you take it? Why didn't you take it?
He didn't have a good time, and it was unfortunate.
Yeah, and then, like, his first round opponent, like, would not shut up about it, and I just felt really bad for the guy. It's like, he made a mistake. He missed it in the pack. There's a lot of flashy stuff happening in front of you.
Yeah.
And then he got rules lawyered out of round two, and that was just a bad day for him.
Bad manners in the, what is effectively casual Magic.
Yeah. Not we were not playing for stakes at that particular time, so.
Or cookies.
So, in this one, we have a Recurring Nightmare. We have a good value guy with Recurring Nightmare. We have one of the best card in Magic. I feel like you could... I feel like I'm just taking a counterspell. I don't really have enough... I can't think of a reason not to take a counterspell out of this particular collection of cards.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I thought you were going to go Avalanche Riders.
Oh, for the deep dicking. No, I was not going to go Avalanche
Riders. See, I thought you were going to go Recurring Nightmare... Like, go deep, swap it, Shriek Maw and Avalanche Riders, and just blow up all their stuff.
That is super good. I'm more of the guy that would slowly gain elemental card advantage and keep pitching them to Forbid and then get them back out of my yard with Recurring Nightmare.
But land destruction.
Yeah. I'm taking Forbid.
Yeah, I think I'm taking Forbid too. The fact that it combos with Recurring Nightmare.
In a way, I guess.
And combos with Ancestral Recall.
Counter spells that go back to your hand that happen to combo with your graveyard. Added bonus. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, I know. The Avalanche Riders is definitely the awesome, like, next level Recurring Nightmare deck. Just Grixis blow stuff up guys, like 187s.
The other thing you can do is, like, when you take Forbid, you could probably get that bargain back, and then...
I don't even want that bargain.
And you're really cooking with gas. I know. It's a magical Christmas land where those things are happening. But wow, this is really awkward. We're 2 for 2 on agreements.
Well, hopefully, maybe we can mess it up on this one. In our next scenario, we have the following cards. Mox Jet, Reanimate, Mesmeric Fiend, Corpse Dance. The pack we see contains Icy Manipulator, Bayou, Maze of Ith, Surrender Befreet, Palancron, Karmic Guide, Metabarbs, Harrow, Treetop Village, Hornet Queen, Hinder.
Okay. There is definitely room for us to not agree here.
Yes.
It would be easy to take a Bayou without thinking.
That's like the, yeah, that's like the default, like, safe pick.
It's also, to me, it's also easy to take Icy Manipulator, because I think that card is grossly undervalued these days.
It's funny. Vin and I were talking about that.
Uh-huh.
And, Vin had a very spot-on statement, which is, everyone in the world except Tristan undervalues Icy Manipulator, and Tristan overvalues it.
You can say it as, you know, I'm not
like,
gonna...
You're correct that everyone thinks it's not as good as it actually is, but your opinion of it is too high. Like, you need to come back down to reality, too.
Maybe. It is possible. So, yeah, I don't know. I like Karmic Guide here because it's so easy to, like, just abuse... Like, you could just go, like, triple abusers. Like, you're going to put... like, that was actually a play that happened on Wednesday. You could put Gisela... Like, someone put Gisela into play off of Corpse Dancing a Karmic Guide.
Yeah.
Which is obviously hot. Karmic Guide is one of those, like, kind of inconspicuous, amazing cards for Reanimator. And I don't think it should be completely overlooked. It's funny, because, like, I want the Bayou and the Hornet Queen. And since
I want the Hornet Queen.
And since I still have to wait for my Clockwork Librarian, I can't get them both right now.
I want that Hornet Queen. I might not be in a capability of ever casting it, but I think that it's a very strong reanimation target, especially Corpse Dance, because even if you don't have a way to, like, sack your Hornet Queen back, you still keep the tokens.
Yeah.
So, like, that's really good.
Plus, like, since it's only a 2-2 body, Corpse Dancing Hornet Queen is really gross on the defensive. For those of you that aren't familiar with the way to abuse Corpse Dance, it was printed before a time where... You know, the wording, if this card would go to any other zone, exile it.
Right. Yeah, really exist.
Yeah, it's kind of before Unearth.
Yeah, as long as you can block.
Yeah, if you can
it'll
block.
Go back to your yard, you can do it again.
You get an endless string of stuff. I just think taking Hornet Queen right here is, like, kind of aggressive.
I don't know, is it?
I mean, I guess you do have 2 really good reanimation spells.
Like...
The other thing about Bayou is, like, I feel
plus,
like...
Plus, like, you're early enough in this draft where you could see Recurring Nightmare still. And Recurring Nightmare with Hornet Queen is absolutely disgusting.
True.
You haven't necessarily even branched out into a second color, and taking Hornet Queen doesn't even really devote you to a second color.
Right, like, you're not
You're
really
probably not casting it.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, like, you're not taking it with the intent of casting it. You might end up doing that, but that's not necessarily a guarantee.
With the anatomy of the draft, taking the Bayou, you could see the Hornet Queen come back around.
Yes.
Is kind of my argument for taking Bayou.
That's a lot of green in this pack.
It's also a lot of green on the card Hornet Queen.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. It's going to scare people off of it. Again, black-green is the color combination where the Bazaar Baghdad is best served. There's a lot of value in that color combination. I would probably double-clutch here and take the Bayou, but I can understand taking the Hornet Queen.
I think Hornet Queen is the flashy, it's the high-risk, high-reward thing. Like,
I feel like you've been on both sides of that card a lot recently.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Actually, in our draft last night, someone got it under a Mimic Vat, and his opponent rage scooped so quickly, it was really impressive.
That's disgusting.
Yes, it was very, very indeed disgusting.
I have definitely gone Hornet Queen with Gaea's Cradle into Crater Hoof Behemoth.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh,
which
yeah.
is just the oh, filthiest.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
There are a lot of cool things you can do with Hornet Queen. The fact that you can get it back with Revel Arc is also gross.
Oh yeah, so gross. I mean, the fact that all of its little 1/1s, like when you think like Klauga Rangers, or like a CGN Commander without its, you know, like when you take away like the physical card and just leave the tokens behind, often you've cut off the head, the problem kind of goes away. With Hornet Queen, you still have flying Death Touch guys.
And four of them.
Yeah, it is well worth its casting cost. It was one of those cards I was really speculative of when it first came out. It didn't make the cube for a long time. But now that we've played with it a lot, it is the bee's knees.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Yeah. So coming off of this, Usman did ask in the chat, and this is actually a topic I feel it's worth talking about, how do we feel about key runes these days? Which is actually, I think, a very strong topic. In that, I feel like when key runes first came out, I was like, this is great. This is good. Kind of a fix for us where... You know, I'm not a big fan of Signets. I feel it really just does a disservice to so many of the decks in the cube format and in limited Magic in general.
They felt like a more reasonable Signets.
Yeah, well,
like,
you know, in Signets
they didn't make Rampant Growth look dumb.
Yeah,
but they had other utility.
So you know, when Signets first came out, I think that we at one point had like 7 of them or 8 of them.
Even. We put all 5 in initially.
From the first set, yeah. From
Return. We just, like, slapped them all in.
And I was like, yeah, they're going to be good. All 10 of them are got to be good until we saw, like, Boros and Orza.
Boros and Orza were like, oh, well, not those, I guess.
So I think at its height, we had 8 in, and very quickly they started to fall off the map. Right now, we're down to 4. 3 blue ones, that would be Dimir, Izzet, and Zorius. And then Rakdos is the last one, because Rakdos is in this weird space where it's a 3-power first striker, which is awesome.
Rakdos is the best activated, but the worst color combination for it, because black-red very, basically never wants that, like, well, a 3-mana mana rock. Like, that's just not what that color combination wants.
Yeah,
unless you're Grixis, in which case you want all the key runes.
You're jumping ahead of me a little bit, but
well,
yes, yeah.
But,
the thing about red-black is there's no, like, I need to get from 3 to 5 or 6.
Really bad.
Yeah, like, yeah. Red-Black's like, I'm pretty happy with 4.
Yeah.
4's pretty good. Unless it's...
Olivia...
Unless it's specifically Bituminous Blast.
Yeah.
So it's funny. So, you know, we talked about it, and actually, in the most recent conversation we had about Change of the Cube, it was brought up again, where it's like, okay, well, Kirins are so easy to shave. And I found myself kind of double-clutching, because it's like, the 3 blue ones we have in there right now, I like all of them for various reasons. The blue-white one, you know, like, blue-white plays big. It plays, you know, your Moat, your Terminus, your 6-mana Elspeth these days, you know, your Sphinx's Revelations, your Venser's, your whatever. I mean, you're gonna want that mana, you're gonna want it in those colors, and eventually you're gonna want to attack with a 2-power evasion guy. So, I feel like that one's well defended. And then you have the Grixis ones. And in our particular cube, we kinda have an affinity for Grixis Control.
Like, you know, we play Nicol Bolas and Cruel Ultimatum.
And it's, like, partly for funsies. It's partly because, you know, like, they do have raw power level.
They're good. I mean, every time I've cast a Cruel Ultimatum, I have won the game. So
it's just about getting there. So in that regard, I kind of...
I like the Dimir Kirin also because that color combination wants the 2-2 unlockable so much.
Yeah.
So like, that blue-black specifically kind of scrapes for win conditions that are reasonably costed. So, like... Creeping Tar Pit and Dimir Kirin are both stellar in that color combination, because sometimes it's just really hard to win the game.
And Red Blue loves the looting.
Does it?
I think it does.
This is, in my opinion, the weakest one that we still have in. No evasion. It's an awkward color combination. Looting is obviously very good.
Anyway, so I feel like I'm going to go a little bit extra to defend the Grixis ones. Which is awkward because I think if I cut the blue-white one, we're still playing the considered to be lesser blue-red one, and the awkward red-black one that are still fine cards in my opinion. And similar with the Vivid lands. We're talking about switching up the lands recently, and I was going to go down to just 3 Vivids. And at first I was like, I'll cut red one, we'll leave, or I'll cut, I don't know. Anyway, I was going to cut one of the Grixis ones, and I had to think about it. I was like, wait a second. The Grixis ones. We keep the Grixis ones. The Grixis control shell is still there. They've got the key runes. They've got the Vivid lands.
I think the Vivid lands should get cut.
The Vivid Lands are kind of the weakest link as far as the mana fixing lands these days.
What we're proposing, or what was proposed that is being considered, is right now we play four Vivid Lands. We do not play the green one.
Because green makes five color all over the place anyway.
So cut all four of the current Vivid Lands and Teleria West, because it doesn't do anything, for the five Shadowmourne filters, the allied color filters. So then we'd have all 10 of the filter lands in.
Filter lands keep proving themselves to be better and better, and I think that, ironically, we keep adding double and somehow triple mana-costed cards of color variety. You know, we live in the devotion age of Magic. So I definitely think we're leaning towards adding in the full complement of filter lands. But to me, I'm not ready to give up on the Vivids yet. I mean, who knows? Now that we're adding in all those Shadowmoor filter lands, we're coming back with five-color control back in the day. We all love that deck.
Yeah.
But who knows? Who knows? But that is our feelings on key runes. I'm not interested in playing a full complement by any means, but I do think that the occasional one-offs right there can be very good. But we're kind of a rough spot determining what we're going to do with those because of building constraints and kind of like archetype support constraints.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's a desire to make all the artifacts kind of good for everybody. Or at least every color. You know, try to be as color agnostic as possible in the artifact section.
I mean, the artifacts are the area where you can specifically lend yourself to certain archetypes, though.
Hmm.
Control decks rarely clamor for equipment outside of Batterskull, I guess.
Yeah.
What is on our show notes list? What is next? I wrote it so long ago. Oh! We'll start with the oldest piece of news, because it is so long between our broadcast times. MTGO Cube came pretty much directly after we had done our last Born of the Gods-related broadcast. It came, it lasted, it went. What were your feelings on it this time around?
I mean, it's kind of... It's been in a position where things are generally the same, cube to cube. They're not... There was a while it felt like where every time that they would bring the cube back, it would be this, like, seismic change of 80 cards, because they're trying to shop the new sets, and they're trying to do all this crazy stuff, and I feel like now the changelog is only like 6 cards. Or, you know, it's smaller, it's more stable.
I feel in many ways we did get our wishes of recent. They tell us kind of where the card swaps are, kind of loosely, but it is there. And on top of that, they haven't really gutted our prize structure any more than we really have, and now the Swiss queues are effectively, you know, infinite cube drafting, which is pretty spectacular. I feel like we've scaled back our demands so much of what we want that we've kind of come to a happy place with what we're getting. And maybe MTGO Cube has kind of found the groove that they've been looking for these last 2 years. You know, it comes back for a couple of weeks before the next set release. If you play in the Swiss queues, it's effectively free for those of you that aren't idiots. And you can draft the, you know, 4 packs queues. The only thing you need to fix on that, in my regard, is that they should run the throwback queues. That they shouldn't run them on top
right.
of each
that
other.
That was always
my
problem with it for a long time. It was like, oh, sweet, I get all these Rise of the Eldrazi packs, but then if I'm drafting that, I can't draft cube. Like,
right.
You know.
I think that is the weakest link in the chain as far as cube goes right now. If they could offset those, like if you could start MTGO cube drafting 2 weeks earlier.
Right,
and then
cube
run
and
the,
then do Rise.
Yeah, and then do the throwback cubes right up until, you know, like, let's say, Journey into Nyx release events or pre-release events online.
Yeah.
That would make us happiest as possible, because I'd be a lot more interested in drafting the single limb cues to get those throwback packs.
Yeah.
If I intended on drafting them at the same time.
You solved the problem by just having the Swiss cube let you go infinite and, like, not worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've, at this point, between November and...
Like, if I'm going to have to actually pay money to draft, I want something on the line that, you know, is a prize that I'm interested in. But if it's free, then screw it, you know. And I think that's kind of what the Swiss cues are, basically, at this point.
As far as the list goes, I don't think there's any, like, horribly egregious errors this time around. I think I've kind of come to this strange, harmonious balance where it's like, yeah... Here's a Progenitus, whatever. It only comes out
Emrakul.
In one way. Emrakul comes out in, like, a few ways. The Progenitus, it's
I
like...
mean, the Motocube has long been... The problems with its construction have kind of been the same for a long time now. There's way more mana fixing than there needs to be. Like, there's just a ton of it. There's a lot of very powerful cards that aren't in it. Like, they just cut Sheldrake Isle, which I thought was a oddly weird thing to do.
You can't reason. It's like a computer. You can't reason with MTGO Cube. You can't why are you doing this to me?
It's cold heart. You know, it can't. So there's just like weird omissions and things like that. But it's not like they've completely screwed the pooch. So Storm is still in it, and Storm is a viable archetype in it.
Barely,
but, you know, it's fine. You're watching DZY draft Storm with Primeval Titan and whatever else it is.
That is entertaining. That will always be entertaining. Yeah, briefly, as usual, you know, Channel, Emrakul, Progenitus, get those cards out of the goddamn queue. For love of the game. I mean, I think there was definitely a match I played, and unfortunately I don't think I streamed it, where it's like, I played a game of Magic with a guy, I won game one. Alright, it was a good game, whatever. Game two, Forest, Channel, Emrakul. That's what my opponent did, and was like, okay, well, great.
And then
game three, like, he got stuck with Channel in his hand, and then it was completely over.
Yeah.
So, not a card. I like, Channel is like one of the worst offenders of not a card.
Well, it's a card, it's just not fun.
No, well, that's what I'm saying, is like, anytime it's involved, one of the two people playing Magic isn't having fun.
Yeah.
The guy in his hand, he can't do anything with it, and he's like, or he's like at 8 life or something, and he's being attacked.
Yeah, you draw it at 7, you're like,
it's like a broken record scenario. I feel like we say these kind of things all the time, but, I cannot, I mean, we play in a world where we play all kinds of broken stuff in our cube, and Channel is just not one of those cards. So.
Anyway.
There you have it, there's the 32nd corner on Channel, not a Magic card. Oh! The final Board of the Gods update. If you go to Cube Tutor over on that side, we'll talk about what actually end up making the change. Oh, you didn't even... Oh, all right. Yeah. So last time we were on...
This is going to be kind of a hard thing to read.
Is it? Can we go super zoom on this?
I'm going to try.
Or can we just make something aesthetically pleasing for the audience that...
No.
All right. For those of you listening after the fact, you have chosen wisely in this particular juncture.
Anyway, so if you haven't seen the cube list, the change this time around was primarily the goal of it. There we go. Now it's humongous.
Basil's collar cut twice.
Yeah, we cut Basil's collar so hard it got cut twice. So as Timon mentioned, the 2014 New Year's resolution was Death to Dirtling. So we've tried as much as possible to remove cards that don't do anything or
hinge greatly on another card to do something.
Yeah.
Zombie Infestation, I guess, is an offender in that regard. I always wanted someone to upheaval into Zombie Infestation like the old days of
school. It happened like once.
I don't even know if it actually ever happened.
It happened with Treasure Hunt.
Matt, the sad thing is the guy went off that way and then he still lost.
Yeah.
I don't even remember how that happened.
So, anyway. So a lot of cards that just didn't really do anything or didn't do enough or were too slow all got cut. We're trying to bring more impactful, interesting...
Or just like better regular limited cards.
Yeah. So, obvious. So the includes from Born of the Gods, Brimaz, very obviously.
King of the obvious.
Spirit of the Labyrinth, Herald of Torment, as the black beater of the day.
Now let's stop on that guy. You were initially not a fan of this card. Has your opinion changed at all?
As we'll see when we talk in our next segment.
Oh.
Black aggro is near and dear to my heart, and I did not give this guy a second thought.
Okay. Alright.
Still
not a fan is what he's trying to tell everyone.
I did, however, see it bestowed on something at the last cube draft, and that was awesome. It was on a Shadow Mage Infiltrator.
Okay.
And that was sweet, but like, eh.
I think you're gonna be seeing it a lot. I don't think it's gonna be that rare.
Meh. Ophiomancer is a
card. We were hitting on just the Born of the Gods cards
again. Okay. Painseer.
Yes, Painseer.
Saturn Nick Smith.
I like this guy. This is another card that is strangely contested among people.
I like that too. I don't know why people are arguing about that card. It seems very good.
I think that it's like... We'll get to that when we get there. Saturn Nick Smith. You don't, like, it's, people talk about it like it has this weird downside. Like, you go to your untap step, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I spent all my mana making a 3-1. Darn it, I can't do anything this turn.
Like, that's exactly what the mono red deck wants to do.
Well, or it's like, you know you have choices.
Yeah, you don't have to do it.
Yeah, like, if you think you're going to do something better, you still have Goblin Chariot.
Yeah.
Which attacked and now did something. Like, you're aggro red. Like, you're happy to make three power haste guys.
And then the last Born of the Gods introduced was Corsair Crucifix. This one's obvious. If you're playing a cube, then it is you allow rares in, not Pauper Peasant. Slap this guy in there. He's completely insane. I had a deck with him at two cube drafts ago that was red-green with Corsair Crucifix, Dome Re-Raid, Sylvan Library, and Bonfire of the Damned, and it was disgusting. Because it was just, I'm gonna switch these around, I'm gonna play this land, I'm gonna gain life, I'm gonna flip for Dome Re, okay, now I'm gonna Sylvan Library, I'm gonna reorder them so I could set this whole thing up again. And it was gross. It was absolutely gross. This card's very, very good.
It was the feel-goods. Now, a couple of cards we had mentioned, that we had debated about, that we didn't include, included, Red Green Xenagos God.
Xenagod.
You are still a fan of personally, is that correct?
I think that Red Green needs a bit of a remodeling.
Okay.
Well, in general.
If you're interior designing the House of Red Green, what do you want to see in it these days?
It might be Xenagod. I probably want Burning Tree Shaman back. I might want Rurikthar.
That was one you threw out there.
Rurikthar seems, it's a card that like we never even really considered, which I think is weird, because it seems real good on paper. Like that card just kicks the shit out of control.
Maybe.
They have to spend at least 6 life to get rid of it.
It's more like it's a 6 damage, to me it's like a 6 damage burn spell.
Right, and if it's better than that,
so
it has Vigilance and Reach.
Two things that red-green creatures love to have.
Take that, Sphinxes, of all shape and size.
I guess. So he's a 6-6 or 6, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so red-green, the gruel color combination in the cube has kind of been at this duality of, are we beat down, are we ramp? And for a very long time,
I feel like the ramp deck is more green blue these days. Red green is more beady. Just because red is so hyper aggro. Like my red green decks are generally like mid range guys, burn for removal. And I like the ability to go over the top in those decks. Like, that's a spot where I like Colonian Hydra. That's a spot where I like Thundermaw Hellkite. That's a spot where I like, the big green guys, if I can get there. So I like having big fives and sixes in that deck. It is fine. Inferno Titan, that's a good spot for her. And you're not necessarily ramp. You're just kind of like a full complement curve of dudes.
Yeah, I mean, in that regard, maybe Burning Tree Shaman is the answer we're looking for. I mean, in this inclusion, we did add Dome Re-Raid, and that card has
so far so good.
Performed admirably. I think above expectations would be the way I would put it so far with Dome.
Yeah, he's been fine so far. So
expectations were pretty minimal, I feel like, so they weren't super hard to beat. Yeah. But going into the other non-Born of the Gods related changes we made in this last update, Negate, long overdue, finally in. That was a card that with recent rotisserie drafts, I felt like that was one we really, really wanted.
Yeah, especially when we've been running 2 remove souls for so long.
Actually, we just only recently added 2nd remove soul.
Really?
Yeah, it was remove soul and exclude.
Oh,
and then
that's
exclude
right.
Became essence scatter.
Right. Well, so there have been 2,
Sure, you can call what you will. It was funny because, I didn't add negate for a really long time because I was like, oh, I don't want to add more weapons to the blue mage. Like, the blue mage has his weapons. Ironically, the negate is actually better for all of the decks against the blue deck.
Right.
The blue deck.
This is like, yeah.
When you have this quick 2-mana, all of the, big X, little U, like aggro decks, like mostly another color beatdown with blue cards in it.
Yeah.
I really like that card. Seal Removal came back. That's just kind of a catch-all card I really, really like.
I like Seal.
Yeah. It's really underrated. I think it's a great card.
Ophiomancer.
That is one that we bricked on when, Commander. I don't remember which Submarine product it was. I had read it as a 1/1 snake that you make during your upkeep. Not a 1/1 Death Touch snake that could be made during every upkeep.
I think this card's very good.
The card is considerably better than I originally thought. I was like, 3 power for 3, it renews the guy on your MP, and it's like...
Plus it's a human, Zathar Necromancer, you get all kinds of kooky stuff with.
Sure, 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 sure.
Dark Ritual makes its return.
Snuck its way back in the hopes of doing more exciting turn one Garolf's Messengers and stuff.
Turn one of Humancer, maybe.
Yeah.
Volcanic Fallout.
That is a nice catch-all. I feel like more pyroclasms are needed for Cube. We cut
flame... It's been a long time since we've run actual pyroclasm.
Almost never, I would say.
Yeah.
Flame Javelin was one of those cards that had been in the Cube since Cube was incepted. And Flame Javelin has been really outclassed over the years. Cards like Flame Slash and Mizzium Mortars have done a great job of doing board control. And you just never see the blue deck or the black deck pay 6 mana for that card.
Right.
So it was really primed to just kind of take a backseat.
Imperial Recruiter is something else that we're trying out.
I really like this card.
This is his first time in the Cube.
This is one of those cards we've always talked about doing, but we've never really pulled the trigger on. And I've really just seen it be just a value guy already. I mean, just in the draft we did today, I was able to choose from the cavalcade of, Phyrexian Revoker, Blade Splicer, Mother of Runes. It might have been
That's a good one.
Yeah, that was just a stunned run of the mill.
So there, Hellkite makes his return.
Yeah, this is probably the one that is most, I don't even say contested, I would say questioned by the masses. When people, tweet me or email me or ask me in the street,
excuse me, kind sir.
I wish I could say it's never happened. Bogarden Hellkite, you know, why Bogarden Hellkite? Why 8 mana? We didn't really have much of a top end for red these days. Red keeps, like, kind of coning itself into, like, cards that wish they were Lightning Bolt and cards that wish they were Goblin Guide.
Yeah.
And we want to kind of, you know, still let it do other things. I mean, red is the hardest color to kind of design for in that it really just does the one thing.
All its cards do the same thing in slightly different...
Yeah,
like
different wording. Levels. Here we have a guy that you can cast at instant speed. Here we have a guy that you can giant arc lightning with. Here you have a guy that's like one of the only red creatures you want to actually reanimate.
Yeah.
I feel like this card is a necessity for the color, and that, you know, there needs to be that top end there. There needs to be that that diversity.
Yeah.
So I like him a lot.
Call the Herd comes back.
Value,
good to see you.
Yeah, value green guys.
Call the Herd.
It's funny. This is a card that I feel like it had been outclassed in terms of Magic cards for a very long time. But we have strategies in our cube that a lot of other cubes don't, in terms of like Bazaar of Baghdad, and to a lesser extent Oath of Druids. And now Oath of Druids is a deck that really likes Call the Herd. It makes guys. Isn't a guy. If, like, you don't have Oath, but you need to block.
Okay.
Well, let's say you've activated Oath once, and this card happens to be in your graveyard. You can make another guy. There's value to be had there. Yeah. I think there's a lot going on there that you just don't see on the surface with Galar.
Erratic Portal.
Doubling up on the return your guys to your hand for the enters the battlefield EBT effects.
This may violate the 2014 Dirtle convention that was passed by the UN. But, we'll see.
I think that there are so many others about. I think that this with Crystal Shard could facilitate that being like a deck type.
Right. There's actually a lot of talk of, like, trying to put together the Time Lock Eternal Witness Crystal Shard Erratic Portal deck.
It's borderline dirtily, but yeah, sure.
Well, Infinite Turns is not dirtily.
Yeah. Infinite Turns is your opponent just scoops, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Ascended Lawmage.
To be fair, they should probably just be Livic Sky Knight or
Lyre
whatever.
Sky Knight,
yeah, just didn't have one handy, so I thought I'd give this guy a day in the sun. It did have a Sword of Feast and Famine on it last Wednesday when we were playing, which was gross. But overall, the blue-white, I want to have a little more diversity again with the color combination you can do, so it's probably going to become Sky Knight in the next update.
Dunray, we already talked about, and the return of Kildoran Outpost.
As the continued lifespan of Crusade and Honor of the Pure, I wanted to bring back Soldier Maker.
An old buddy for it?
Yeah. So there you have it.
There you have it.
Any notable cuts you want to touch on, or is it stuff that kind of just fits into our theme this year of...
R.I.P. Phyrexian Tower. Too soon.
Really?
Never forget.
I think that is the prime target of the you don't do anything, you were a terrible quarter case to try to make a deck go off.
Oh, never come on.
Worse yet, I feel like I've cut cards recently where people would just play badly because they had them.
Yeah.
Like, people would sack creatures left and right to, like, try to, like, speed up a little bit to play something off. It would just be really bad stuff. I mean, we do get Ophidomancer, so I guess there's a little bit extra going into tower there. But, you know, we can't all be winners. I feel like I cut a lot of cards here where it's like people were playing badly with them. So I was like, let's stop doing that. Let's try to make life better.
Okay. So that's that.
Ah, yes. Now, I mean, you've been alluding most of the show already to, rotisserie drafts. We've done a few of these now. We realized that the spreadsheet format legitimately works for this.
Yeah.
We were speculative a while back, but it works.
For those who have not been following, hanging off our every word on Twitter, we've started a series of rotisserie drafts in which we use a Google spreadsheet to track it, wherein we have 8 people who can edit, and then we have everyone pick an order. the downside of people editing stuff.
Double bin.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, Eck was very speculative in the past that people would drop out, or their decks would be terrible halfway through and they wouldn't complete. We didn't have that problem. And this is the third one of these we've done since December. And the only reason it's taken us 3 months to do 3 of them is we had one that literally took a month.
Well, and, you know, there's a bit of a delay because, you know, like, for example, this one took a business week, but we probably won't play until next weekend.
But we don't have to keep checking back on the spreadsheet. I mean, like, you know, generally, during the course of the work week, you know, we'll just kind of pass messages between each other being like, alright, it's your pick, alright, it's your pick, and keep checking the spreadsheet. Obviously, there are certain runs of it where we're like, we want to get through a lot of it, we're trying to nudge people, we're like, come on, I know.
Yeah.
You're in the 2 chair, I'm in the 1 chair, we can power out these picks right now, get back.
Yeah.
Whoever was in the 3 chair was just on the spreadsheet 5 minutes ago, I'm sure they can come back.
Right. So, they have been very successful, and they've all been very interesting. I would recommend, if you have a playgroup who you all know each other, you kind of have the regular people you play with, but it's hard to get together all the time, this is a great way to kind of...
convince your friends to come together.
Yeah, but it's also a good way of like, okay, this is a way we can talk about the cube and talk about drafting, without necessarily having to like, okay, let's all get together at somebody's house or at the game store. Because everybody can do this, you know, from home or work, you know, network allowing. But I think it's fun. I think it's interesting because we've done 3 of these now, and...
Usually we only do like 2 a year.
Right.
Because we have to go to a game store, we have to get a lot of table space, we have to lay out all the cards. I mean, it's a fun spectacle in a way to do it when you do it for reals and all the cards are there. And
yeah,
everyone's
it's
in
a
the
spectator
same,
sport at that point.
Everyone's in the same room, like, joshing each other, like, when hate drafts happen or or stuff. I mean, it's a fun experience, so if you do have the chance to do it in real life at a place, I do recommend doing that. This is one of those things where it's like, there's no downside to just kind of starting this with your friends. You know, obviously it was a little frustrating when it took us a month to get through one of these, but it was still worth doing and we had fun doing it. Building your deck that long afterwards was a little awkward, but, these are a lot of fun. Anyone that's, ever considered rotisserie drafting, I feel like we said on the show before, definitely give it a shot.
They're a lot of fun. And as I've been saying, they're all very interesting because we've had 3 of these so far and they were all entirely different. You know, one of the things that I thought might have been a problem is, well, okay, we're going to do one, and we're going to get into basic archetypes, and then that's it. And we're just going to see the same 8 decks every time. And the pick orders aren't going to be very different. And, you know, other than the first, you know, the first 2 to 3 rounds are pretty consistent in terms of what cards get taken, but past that, you know, the sky is the limit.
Well, it's funny, because even 2 card combinations, even in those considered to be the best of the best cards of all Magic, even a lot of those 2 card combinations can be so different and diverse that they can generate all different other decks.
Yeah.
That's why I think there's a lot more, room for variance that even I was speculative of when we first started doing these, where it's like, yeah, you know, It's going to be, somebody's going to have Snapcaster Ancestral every time. Someone's going to have, like, Crypt Soaring every time.
Someone's going to have Stoneforge, Batiskull.
Someone's going to have, you know, Jet Mind Twist every time. But, yeah, there's still a lot out there. I mean, you know, who knows? At this point, like, this last draft you did, I feel like you really, you just wanted to draft a particular deck. It wasn't like you were going in trying to meta, trying to...
And that's what I did in the previous ones. I was not going in with a preset plan in the first ones. I was playing it by ear. And it kind of adjusting on the fly. This one, I kind of had it in my head that I wanted to draft, for those of you not looking at it right now, Mono Black Aggro, and...
Test its limits, if you will.
Yeah, and I mean, I wanted to draft this deck so bad I took Mind Twist over Time Walk. You know. If I was drafting on pure power, that would not have happened. So...
I just dawned on me that Time Walk went like 13th in this draft? 8th?
12th.
12th. That's not right at all.
No. Jitte and Strip Mine also going over Time Walk, not correct. But...
That's debatable. Well, no, it's not. Time Walk is, like, the second best card.
So, I wanted to play the Mono Black Aggro deck. I wanted to push it. You know, we've been talking about it. I've drafted it in drafts and go back and forth. So I've got, you know, I set out to do...
And the nice thing about...
Try to do this deck justice as much as I can.
And the nice thing is that no one really... You don't have a lot of overlap in many cards where it's like, yeah, you want, like... Dark Confidant, Duress, Thoughtseize, Hymn to Torak.
Literally the only three cards on Sat I didn't get, basically, were like these three.
That being Liliana of the Veil, Hymn to Torak, and Demonic Tutor?
Yeah. And I guess Duress. And maybe Tree. I don't know.
Anyway. I think those five cards would have all made your main deck.
So...
Maybe not Liliana, actually.
Liliana, insane. Anyway.
It's just like a glorified edict for your deck.
Anyway. So, that was like what I set out I wanted to do. Casey, very clearly, you know, he took Jitte over all these other cards, so he very clearly wanted to play the Stoneforge aggro white deck, and he has a very good copy of it. You know, he's got the Aether Vial, plenty of one drops.
Being on the wheel allotted him the ability to kind of get the Stoneforge package at once, and also get the seemingly package deal that happens in all of our drafts of the Swords of Plowshares Path to Exile Premier Removal package.
It's a good package.
So, you know, in our draft, we've got a mono-white draft, we've got a mono-black drafter, we've got a mono-blue drafter. My deck, which I'm very happy with, is like a red-blue, don't never tap mana on your turn, counter spells and burn spells pool. We have kind of like a green, rampy creature deck. We have a Naya Zoo deck, in a way, or kind of like a Tribal Flame Zoo deck. And then we've got a couple...
You've got like a four-color control.
Loosey-goosey ones. But,
We've got Rexxer.
Oh, I guess the Rexxer deck is the other one. There's only one deck that is clearly like WTF, what are you thinking this particular time around. That is the player who opens on Sol Ring Mana Crypt, Mana Vault Grim Monolith, and then halfway through the draft goes back-to-back picks of like Recoil Pillage, flanked by, you know...
I think Rex deck is actually very good.
It is very good because a lot of us drafted like derpy aggro decks.
Right, I think Zach made the most metagame call out of all of us and adjusted what he wanted to do, and I think it's fine. This draft was also interesting because, so like, we've done this now three times, we have a kind of the same group of people doing it with like two different guys, three different people on each one, and I feel that, as people get more comfortable with it and comfortable with their tendencies and things like that, things like the hate starts flowing a lot harder.
You think that? I think that was more of a byproduct of just how this whole draft was just very different than I think previous drafts. And there have definitely been, it's funny, I think in live rotisserie drafts, there's a lot less straight hacking and hate drafting from people.
Yeah.
Because you're not like physically looking at the card pool that people have in front of them at the time.
Right. You don't see the train coming in.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to slip one by the goalie when they're like, they're never going to see this card coming because they don't know about these other cards.
Right.
Where the spreadsheet form, it's very easy to be like, oh, this person just took these cards.
Like this natural order hack against the Raphelos.
But that's a lot of the fun of it. I mean, actually, it wasn't the Raphelos. Casey was able to take that natural order because Vin had been slowly picking off weird crap like Dryad Arbor, which is like this flashing red
Dryad
light.
Dryad Arbor was a red light. Yeah.
Anyway, again, we could go deep on this all day, but we've had a lot of fun with it. We try to post them online, let people know when we're doing it, so you can kind of like take a
look. Yeah, they're all publicly viewable, so when we do them, you know, people can.
You can go back and ridicule the people you think screwed up on their picks.
Well, and they have a chat too, so when they're live, you know, I'll idle the document all day and kind of like facilitate and text people and message them like, hey, it's your pick or what cards do you want or whatever. So a lot of times we'll get people in the chat like, why'd you take this? Or what's up with this card? Or what blade did this?
Why has no one taken this really good card? How did Flametongue Kavu not get picked in this entire draft?
There's always, you know, every time you do this, you always think, oh, well, it's just going to be the best cards or whatever. Every time we've done this, we get to the end, and there's, like, at least 10 to 20 cards where it's like, how did no one take that? Gideon Jura, nobody took. Restoration Angel, nobody took. There's just so many cards. It's like,
Ancestral Vision almost didn't get taken.
The fact that Ancestral Vision went in the 44th round.
It's funny because I didn't want it.
Which is surprising to me.
Nah, it's, well, if you don't have it in your opener, like, what the F is it gonna do?
Draw cards later?
Yeah. Not my jam, man. Okay. I want the here and the I want the now.
Live in the now.
Young Pyromancer is clearly the best card in my whole deck.
You have Young Pyromancer? Oh yeah. So you did.
In the 18th round.
Nice.
Anyway, yes, to also doubly answer the chat question. Pyromancer's been absolutely great in Cube. I mean, obviously it's been spectacular in Rotisserie, but that's not really where you can give it a good barometer of its playability. It's been very good in regular Cube drafts. I like it a lot more than people like cards like Gutter Snipe. Making attackers and blockers is really key. It goes a lot further than always Lava Spike your opponent.
Yeah. Or two. I will say that the first Rotisserie draft that we did in this format, when we played the matches, they were like some of the best Cube matches I've ever had.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like they were just, I don't know if it was just like a weird thing, this is the decks, whatever, just absolutely stellar top to bottom games.
Well, I mean,
it was really fun.
From the second one that we did recently, it kind of fell apart a little bit because one of the guys was sick, so we had to get a replacement the last second. We only played 3 rounds, which doesn't really do justice to this kind of format. Like, you know, for this next one, like, we gotta lock it in. Like, you're coming in, we're gonna play 5 rounds, we're gonna play most of the opponents. We're gonna have
a round robin this motherfucker.
Yeah, like, you spend a week drafting it, you don't wanna spend 4 hours playing 3 matches. Like, you really wanna know, like, we didn't even play our last 2 decks against each other.
Sure.
So, we never really know. I mean, I got so discouraged when I lost round 3. Oh my god. Grave Titan is a very good Magic card.
Yeah. So, this is fun. Again, if anybody has, you know, a group of cubers and they should absolutely give this a try, you know, at least give it a try. You know, it's possible that your play group won't do it or doesn't want to do it or whatever.
It is important to have 8. I think this format would even be better with 10 people.
Yeah, I think that the decks would get very weird looking if you got it less than 8. But I don't think it would be a problem if you had more.
No, we've done it with 10 before.
Yeah.
Like, I remember way back in the day, interest was really, really, like, turn people away all the time. We drafted with 10. I think if we were to do it live again, it was like 10 people managing the spreadsheet with the hours maybe a lot harder. Like, it's already kind of difficult to get
the 8. One issue with the spreadsheet is it's awkward when you've got people who either keep very different hours or, like, can't respond at work. So there's just like big chunks of the day where no movement happens.
Right, like there's a lot of picks take place between like 4 to 8 PM.
Yes.
And then 8 AM rolls around and 4 people are sitting in the spreadsheet waiting and it's like, oh, that guy's asleep, that guy gives my computer.
I definitely did a lot of that.
Well, you were kind of like the spreadsheet moderator. You would kind
of. I'm fine with doing that. I would just keep it open in the background at work and when it was your pick, I would text you, and it was Zach's pick, I would send him a Facebook message, and then when it was Bolin's pick, I would send him, and then people would just send me, like, you would just text me cards, and I would just take what you asked, you know, and that was just an easier method than, alright, it's your turn to log on to the spreadsheet, you have to enter this stuff yourself, well, like, you know, as long as everyone's in, you know, good sport about it, then you can get it done really quick. I mean, had we not had some lapses of time where no one was, we roadblocked on certain people because of being awake or being at work. We're probably going to finish this thing in like 2 days, 3 days.
It's possible. The very first one we did, we like really rode people. We were afraid of that dropout factor and we got through it in like 3 days.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel like certain people, like there was one guy who like normally works a job that's not near a computer, and he just kind of like inadvertently took a day off of work.
Yeah, so I felt bad. I didn't realize that.
He's like, so he could sit at home and run his computer and make his picks.
I felt bad about that.
Yeah, we don't want that. Like, the whole thing is like, you want to be able to do this in the background.
Yeah.
And you know, again, we're talking to people that want to play a lot of Magic, so if you're listening to this, you're one of those people that probably end up thinking about it a lot more during the course of your day than is probably proper to get shit done, so it probably works out pretty well. But moving on, maybe you hate rotisserie drafts. Maybe, fuck that shit, you know three people and you live in Alaska. Not to dog on people who live in Alaska, I'm sure they know lots of people. But we'll move on from something like that. We'll move on to a topic that was, I'm not going to say bludgeoned to me by our good friend Jay Bush of the A-Team, but I will say that Jay had randomly tweeted out to some of us cubers a couple weeks ago asking about 2-1s for 2 in your cubes. How many do you play? And I answered him 11. And he was like, 2-1 flyers. And I was like, 0. And then he was like, I don't get it. And it spurred a long conversation about, because he's mostly referring to white. Although I guess a lot of people he knew also have like Welkin Turn and the new version of Welkin Turn in their cubes. That we don't do that. But it reminded me of the long-standing kind of like ever-evolving changes that have happened to white over the years. You know, cube 6 years ago was a lot of guys that cost white.
I feel like we made some kind of like blood oath 10 years ago. We would always support white aggro with cube, white weenie.
Yeah.
And has changed over time.
It's a cornerstone of Magic the Gathering.
We've always supported it. And yeah, so a million years ago, it was all your Black Knight, your Silver Knight, your Zalfrin Crusader, your...
Oh my god, Knight of Dawn. Knight of Dawn. That guy. Oh.
Sarah Avenger.
Things with Sultari in their name.
Yeah, every Sultari guy, everything that just costs white. And over time, those guys.
And it's funny because at the time,
what's your foot?
I think I actually wrote an article at one point where I was about drafting white aggro, and I think I remember saying something like, "Well, if you're gonna draft white guys, you're gonna have to draft all of them, and you're gonna be drafting lots of white." And those things are
8.5 tails.
Oh yeah, that's like the bee's knees too when it comes to like your white creatures. So, you know, Jay had kind of brought up what's like, you know, I like to open on your Savannah Lions, follow that up by like a 2-1 flyer, you know, follow it up with like a, who knows what. But he was like, you know, that's why you keep the beats going, that way you don't get blown out by like a Wall Omens or something. My whole thing was it's like, we support a token strategy a lot more in our cube where the goal is to kind of go wide with your creatures quickly instead of trying to go up. Not necessarily tall, like, you know, the classic, you know, your battlefield either goes wide or goes tall. But I think that with the white aggro from the area he's coming from, it's like, you know, you go a little wide and you go high. You go over. Evasion is key, you know.
Evasion.
Kind of the baseline card for that is like, say, a Mistral Charger, where it's like, you know, it's gonna get around all these ground pounders you're so concerned about and all these other decks, and that's gonna be the ticket.
And my whole thing about those cards, because they've been in it various times before.
Kind of. I mean, it's funny. I think over the years, like, we cut white creatures. Like, we cut the White Knight. Yeah, we cut the Silver Knight, we were playing
Mistral Charger and stuff like that.
Maybe for, like, a hot second. Like, that's been an on-deck cube for a year now.
They seem very unexciting to me. The way I like my white creatures is efficient, but also disruptive. I like me, yes, the Aven Mindset Seer. Yes. I like me the Spirit of the Labyrinth. I like me the...
Having something attached to you, other than like flying a shadow, is key to doing stuff in a game of Magic. And maybe we're missing the point here. If we aren't making Spectre Procession tokens, if we're not making Brimaz tokens and Cloud Guard Ranger tokens, then all we need is flying. That gets us by all these other decks that are out there. And I don't think that's the case. But I'm willing to explore it, and you know, when I kind of dug deeper on the subject, I felt like it wasn't like it was 2-1s that we were lacking, I felt like it was just there weren't enough
two drops.
Because again, we cut a priest, lot of them. We cut monk, we cut, you know, various knights of things.
We kind of unintentionally slowed the color down. Because we cut, like, you know, cut Black Knight for Academy Rector, cut, or, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah, sure.
But We were cutting two drops for not two drops, yeah. And it just slowed everything down.
And we try to be really mindful of that. I think it just happened slowly over time, and we were like, oh, we're making the color better because we got rid of a guy that costs white. It's like, well, right. Putting in a guy that costs double white and two didn't really help.
Right.
So we're mindful of that. We're going to be bringing it back. I don't think that the, like, you know, the 2-1 flyers, I don't know what the better to call them. I don't think that that's the present or the future as far as, like, aggressive white goes in Cube. You know, I stand by, you know, we support the Crusades as much as we can. And, you know, I'd imagine over time more of those cards will be coming in. It was actually funny when we were having that conversation. It was a card like Precinct Captain we just hadn't played with. And it's like, you know what? Maybe that's, I know it's double white, but I know it's a good direction.
There's
to
room
go
for some of them. Just not a million.
Yeah, I think that you'll see that. We're willing to explore that space. I'm definitely going to, cheapen up white. And it's funny because I think a lot of the colors that support aggressive creature strategies in Cube really have like this widening gap between like, here's a big chunk of one and twos, and then there's like kind of a chunk of like the fat that you can be used in various areas and forms. But there's nothing really to, like, glue it all together.
Right.
Like, you want your Achroma, you want your Angel of Serenity, yeah. You want your big...
You want Elishnor, and you want Savannah Lions.
Yeah, and there's nothing...
But what about, like, Hero of Bladehold?
There's two cards in between, yeah. It's like Restoration Angel, Hero of Bladehold, Brimaz, maybe a Cloudbear Ranger. But it's like...
Archangel,
like,
of Thune.
Yeah, ones and twos, and then, like, crazy fat.
So, this right now is the proposed changelog upcoming...
We have a lot of time to sit and think
right.
about this.
Right. This is just kind of like, this is the current, what's on the whiteboard. So on top of, making room for the white two drops, part of what's going away to make that happen is the Academy Rector package. Rector, Debtor's Knell, Yawgmoth's Bargain, Form of the Dragon are all being, proposed to be cut. I like it. Academy Rector.
I like it too. I don't really have a problem with that card at all.
People have been playing the Rector deck or the Rector, you know, combo, and it's been okay.
It's not for lack of trying.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just, I don't know. I feel like everyone, no one's really excited about it and no one's really sad to see it go. Everyone's just kind of very indifferent.
And it's very swingy.
Yeah. It's also very swingy.
It's funny, out of those four cards you mentioned, I actually feel the worst for Form of the Dragon. I feel like it was finally coming into its own, where like the green-red ramp decks were like kind of stoked to get a moat that kind of like changed the game state for them. Some of like the big blue X control decks were kind of stoked on that card too. You know, it wasn't an everyday Magic card, and it's so full of like flavor that I am sad to see it go. I don't know if there's another way to bring life to Form of the Dragon. But it had a really good run with us, and I'm going to enjoy playing it this last month or so that we have it in there.
We did Form of the Squirrel to go along with it.
Not so much.
Other things being cut. Mirror Entity.
Another one of those, like, you know, again, we're cutting the Dirtle out.
Right.
Like, didn't really do anything. It very rarely plays the way you would play in Lorwyn Limited. Lorwyn Limited, that card is like a bomb. There are very few cards that are better than Mirror Entity.
Yeah.
Because it's just like you untap, and then all your guys are 5/5s, and your opponent's dead. That happens pretty rarely in Cube. Like, we just talked about how white should have this token kind of, support. But Mirror Entity is kind of this really fragile thing.
It's like, it's very unnecessary. Like, if you have 7 tokens in play, like, you don't also need Mirror Entity shenanigans. Very rarely, I don't think I've ever seen the, like, Revelark body double Mirror Entity, like, loop.
I have seen it happen. I have done it myself. But the fact that it happens so rarely, and the fact that it is this really centered around combo, I understand. So, again, this is a we're cutting the Dirtle scenario. The Academy Rector shenanigans and the Mirror Entity shenanigans kind of end here.
Achroma, Angel of Wrath, is also on the chopping block, which is sad. She doesn't really get cast all that often. I liked her as a reanimation target. Like, you know, I like vigilance. I like protection from relevant colors.
The fact that, like, half the reanimation spells don't get her is kind of a bust.
Yeah.
That's problem.
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
Barter in Blood, another card on the chopping block, although this change is pretty soft.
Tell us your feelings on Liliana of the Dark Realm, Zach.
That card doesn't do anything.
See, the problem is that black doesn't have any planeswalkers. And black just really wants planeswalker. They just want...
They all suck.
They want this card type that can, like, stay in play past a disc, they past a balance, they suck past a wrath of god.
They're
like,
all terrible.
You know, they don't have enough enchantments to kind of fill that space. And I keep thinking, like, all right, Soren Markov, too expensive, not good enough. All right, Liliana Vess, also too expensive, not impactful enough. All right, Liliana the Dark Realms. All right, here's a card. They only cost 4. You're netting card advantage or killing their important stuff. It's not great, but it's just the color needs this card type.
I hope that we get a Black Planeswalker that isn't ass, and then I'll be all about it.
Dark Realms is not solid. I agree that it is not solid, but I'm saying it's doing things that black the color just needs.
I have my doubts. Careful Consideration and Standstill getting cut out of blue. Careful Consideration is probably the weakest blue draw spell.
It's all up for debate. I mean, blue on the spell side is so strong.
Yes. Yeah. Standstill, very rarely did Standstill really see play.
Take the helm, I'll be right back.
Okay.
Yep.
So Standstill, you know, didn't often see play, and occasionally would even be see play incorrectly. I've had opponents before who've gone literally turn one, island, mana crypt, Standstill, go. And that, you know, doesn't really lead to a lot of wins. So, Standstill just kind of gets cut. Preordain's a card that should have been in, you know, it's not the most exciting, but it's a card that should be there. It's obviously really good. Right now we've got, so Form of the Dragon, Fireball and Slith Firewalker. Slith Firewalker is probably one of the weaker of the red 2-drops. I like it, and I think I might like it more than Reckless Reveler. This is still a changelog in progress, obviously. But I definitely understand, you know, it's a bad top deck. It's really only good on turn 2. It's still even awkward then sometimes. But I don't know how many more Hearthcommy Torch Fiend guys we really need. And Fireball just... The X spells are kind of just on their way out. We've trimmed down that number over the last few changes. We've reduced, you know, we had Comet Storm for a while. We were playing Demon Fire and Bane Fire and all of these, you know, so we've kind of slowly trimmed that number because there's just not a lot of decks that want them. We have the Earthquake and the Rolling Earthquake. Those are still fine. But I think Fireball is still, it's kind of, you know, we have doubles play, and very rarely was Fireball getting split up, so, you know, I think it's finally time for that one to go. Giant Growth, Primal Command, Giant Growth, you know, it's history. It's everybody, you know, good fond memories of Giant Growth, but I don't think I've seen this card cast in Cube in a year. Not in 8-man, at least. Maybe in Heads Up, Winston Drafting, but Giant Growth just doesn't see much play anymore. Primal Command's a card that's been in and out. I was saying Plow Under for Primal Command because their effects are somewhat similar, but Primal Command is more flexible. This is the most likely one to change if we could find another, green spell that we like. Ascended Lawmage becoming Light of Sky Knight, we mentioned that before. That was a card availability thing more than anything else. Vithian Renegades for Artifact Mutation. It's just a little different. Vithian Renegades is kind of he's an awkward spot because he's a very redundant effect for both red and green. You know, green has Uktabi and Viridian Shaman. Red has Keldon Vandals. It's got Torch Fiend. It's got Hearthcommy. It's got a lot of guys that destroy artifacts. So he's taking up very valuable real estate. You know, the red-green section, very small, for this effect that he is effectively the 7th copy of, which I felt is a little unnecessary. Artifact Mutation at least plays a little bit differently.
Artifact Mutation is a weird one because it's one that neither of us really nominated or feel like aggressively...
Yeah, that was a community vote,
yeah,
so to speak, player base vote. I think the red-green section will get more changes before any of these really get put forth.
Again, these are, I mean, remember these are all placeholders for now.
But right. They are things on the table.
Yeah.
Pirate Spellbomb becoming Worn Power Stone. Worn Power Stone should have never gotten cut, in my opinion.
Meh, it's in this weird portion of the ramp curve that I feel is...
I think it's very good.
It's like mostly a green card to me.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, alright.
And then the discussion currently rages on about the filter lands and specifically what should be cut for them. Tristan wants to cut all kinds of stuff all over the place, which I disagree with. Horizon Canopy especially should not go anywhere.
It's a fine card, but you know, you only have so many like green-white dual land spots.
Yeah. I just, we'll go back to this. This section needs a little work.
So if you're listening, you know, Eck wants to cut four vivid lands in a Tolarian West. Alright, I'm not arguing anything about Tolaria West. Like, we don't play a Pact of Slaughter Pact currently, although I could definitely see adding it if it continues to live on. Now, I was going to cut one vivid land. We had four left. We're going to go down just the Grixis ones to support the Grixis control decks. And then to there, it's like, well, you know, you shave off from the seemingly utility lands to fill in for the rest of the cycle. And we're not even really, like, really, we're cutting two quote-unquote utility lands, but we're also cutting Urborg, which is another, like, super black fixer, which is the whole point of adding in cards like Sunken Ruin and Graven Cairns. So really, we're just losing Barbering and Horizon Canopy, and Barbering is...
fine. I played it last week.
Yeah, it's fine. None of the lands in Cube are bad. They're always lands. Like, they're gonna make your deck. That's like saying...
Slayer West is pretty bad.
Hey, look, last night, somebody played Grixis Control to cast Cruel Debatum, and they definitely Teleria Wested for a mountain at one point. It was important.
It does happen.
Either way, I like this change setup as opposed to gutting Vivids. I think that Vivids still a lot of use. I mean, we still play Reflecting Pool. Who knows? I mean, we still talk about putting Undiscovered Paradise in the cube. I think that card still does stuff.
Who is talking about that?
Oh, I've been talking about whatever.
You just by yourself, by myself, just in your room.
By myself.
While you're asleep, just bumbling. I just care about anything.
I agree. With Ancient Grudge coming in, Artifact Mutation might be a bit of overkill. I'm one of those people that think the Vithian Renegades could just become Burning Tree Shaman at the end of the conversation.
I think that... So we currently have a lot of guys that destroy artifacts. I don't know if we need another one.
We don't have that many. I took two of the three of them in the rotisserie draft that were red.
Yeah, and I think we've got three dudes in red, five dudes in green.
Wicker Bow Elder, Ink Stomp, oh, Acidic Slime. So two kind of 3/5 drops and 2/3 drops?
Yeah.
I mean, if red was going to add a sixth one, I'd be like, okay, I see where you're coming from.
We just don't need that many shitty shatters.
They're shatters that attack. Shitty shatters would be like Shattering Pulse.
No, these are shitty shatters. Because if you want to shatter, they don't attack. They're shitty shatters.
They attack until they shatter.
No, they don't. They suck.
Artifacts in Magic are historically one of the better card types.
You just hate artifacts.
I don't hate them. I love them. That's why I want
to... You love to destroy them.
I do. I want to honor their existence.
By making all the cards
shatter. By showing how important it is to keep them under control.
I think that they're unnecessary. I think those cards can be more interesting, spells. I like variety over redundancy, generally speaking. Obviously there's certain things you can't really avoid.
I think that finding the perfect blend is the most important thing.
Sure. I think that
when guys that
sacrifice themselves to destroy an artifact is not something we need to be super redundant on anymore. But there are
five red creatures. Three of them could sack to destroy an artifact. I think that's okay.
Yeah, it's too many.
At that point, we should just cut a Llanowar Elves.
Llanowar Elves are good, unlike these.
Now we're getting to the root of the argument.
Like I said, this is a pending changelog. This is not happening immediately. When Conspiracy comes out, this will be different.
We actually get Journey into Nyx before Conspiracy.
Do we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, when Journey into Nyx comes out, this will also be different. So it's a ways off. We have plenty of time to argue about this, which we'll do tonight, actually, once we finish recording this.
Yes.
Start yelling about stuff.
Sure.
Put the whiteboard to good use.
Yeah. I do enjoy those times where we'll sit down as a kind of a commune and take a section of the cube and then...
The council has been called to order.
And we'll debate something.
Today we shall discuss Simic.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when we left the Simic discussion, we all had a better understanding.
Yeah.
If we need to go and have a gruel discussion.
I feel like I learned more about Zach as a person that night than any other night. Except maybe that time in Vegas.
Simic Sky Swallower. Oh, okay. There was a question I had gotten on Twitter recently that asked about, I'm gonna actually bring that back up, I'll make sure I don't miss anything. How do you handle drafting the cube without the maximum number of players? What are you worried about as far as exclusions go and how it is drafted? Which is actually, without even trying, a great go-between with what we were just talking about whether or not how much redundancy you want versus unique effects, tied into dirtling and kind of like corner case cards and decks. My whole thing is that I like variants. I like the ability to sit down and play Magic and never have it be a repeat of the time we did it before. Every single draft, you want to be as unique and different as possible. So when you play a 360-card cube with eight people total, and you do that every week, and every single card is in there, I wouldn't want that. I'm glad that we live in a world where we draft...
No two drafts are the same.
Yeah.
I like that, too. I think that when you're... A 360... is totally fine if you have a regular group of four.
Yeah. And that's another question that comes up a lot is people, you know, this is something,
yeah, like, I can't get eight. We can only get four. What should our cube look like? It's like,
I mean, I'm still one of those people where it's like, yeah, you can sell a 1,000-card cube, no problem. I mean,
yeah.
We played, big box Magic long before cube existed where it was just a collection of loose cards we had. And it was, the variance was what was really fun about it.
Or like MTGO Crap Magic.
Very few people are familiar with the concept of Crap Magic. Crap Magic is a lot of fun. Crap Magic is you go into your MTGO collection, you randomly click on 60 cards, and you build a deck, and then you challenge your friend online
who did the same thing.
Now,
the more you draft, the better this works. The less you play Constructed, the better this works. Because the goal is to have just, like, horrid, chaff commons, kind of.
Diversity matters. Like, yeah. Somebody that, like, I remember we played Crap Magic with people that, like, played a lot of Constructed Online but never drafted.
Right, so, like, all their cards are just crazy bombs.
Yeah, you're like, that's stupid. How'd you know? Well, that's no fun. Regardless. Yeah, I don't, yes, I, you know, people are, you know, Kevin Metal from Heavy Meta was always asking, like, oh, you know, I'm lucky to get six ever. It's me and my buddy a lot, heads up. We get four on the weekends. Should we have a tiny cube? Should we have a 240-card cube to make sure combos always come together? A lot of it's a personal preference. Like, yeah. I would play Magic with just this guy for an entire year, and I would be fine if the cube was 1,200 cards.
Yeah.
That would not be a problem, I think.
Yeah, I like the variance of cube. I think it's more important to make sure that you've got ways to keep it interesting. So, Winston drafting, grid drafting, Rochester drafting...
Not being butthurt because a particular deck didn't come together also kind of helps too when you add more cards to your team.
Yeah, I think managing expectations is a big part of it.
It's like, I took the Oath of Druids first overall in your 360-card cube and I didn't get an Oath deck. It's like, well then you just suck at drafting. Like,
yeah.
Maybe you could have had one, maybe you couldn't have had one and you didn't realize how to draft other cards. Like, you can't be mad at the person who built the cube.
You get a lot less wiggle room for... cute stuff like that, though, in a 360, just because there's not as much room. So, you can't really have, like, one-offs that just, like, occasionally come together or whatever.
Seismic Assault is a good example of a card where it's like, I wouldn't really...
Play that in a 360.
Yeah. Like, I love it. And again, you know, for us, it's about Magic history, and it's about variants, and it's about remembering drafting 8th edition, where Seismic Assault was just a literal bomb by itself.
Yeah, it's just a house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, familiarizing yourself with, you know, so most people know Winston drafting. I find that grid drafting is a good four-way draft format. I find that, Rochester, Team Rochester especially, is like the best six-man format, like 3v3 Rochester. Personal favorite.
Hard to argue with that.
You know, so keeping it interesting that way, and especially if you have a smaller cube, you know, I would advocate, especially if you have a regular group of players who don't, you know, with us, on a weekly basis, we have anything from 8 to 14, 16 people, and it's a lot of, you know, probably 8 regulars and then X number of randoms.
A pool of like 60 people will draw from Oakley.
Yeah. And for a lot of them, you know, they don't see the cube regularly because they're random, so they know, they've seen it before though, and they know generally what is available and what isn't, and things like that. But if you're in a situation where it's always the same 4 dudes, and it never really changes, it's just you, Bob, Steve, and Joe, and you're the only people who draft this thing, don't be afraid to change the cube up a lot, often. To keep it fresh and interesting.
Assuming that they also know what's going on.
Right. I mean, keep them abreast of the change logs.
Really want to dick them once.
Right. But, you know, maybe you want to try throwing the whole Goblins plan in there. Or
go
maybe
super tribal one.
So yeah, or go, like, you know, now we're...
I'm adding the merfolk, and I'm adding the goblins, and I'm adding the tree folk.
Or whatever. You know, you could do different lackey. I'm going to try storm out. I'm going to do whatever. So, because you're just trying to keep those people entertained rather than have, like, this consistent product.
I do feel like we've deviated a lot from the original question, though, which was, are you fearful when you're drafting with less than the maximum number about any portion of the draft?
You mean the maximum amount of the cube?
Yeah, I think the original question was more like, I have this unit, this 450-card unit. You always play with 10 people. Well, now I've got 6. So, like, there's a bunch of stuff that I don't know. Like, it's like, there's uncertainties.
I think that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, I think the uncertainties are good. I think the card evaluation in a vacuum.
I mean, when you're booster drafting, you can't build around, for sure getting some specific rare or even an uncommon. You might never see it. Commons.
Yeah.
So, being able to evaluate on the fly and be flexible is a long-standing, trait that is admirable for booster drafting, and I think it's no different in cube.
Plus, I think a really good example here is, like, if you try to do one of those things where you're like, I'm going to draft for a specific deck or card that I know is going to be out there.
Right.
Then you don't get it. And it's like, in Onslaught Draft, the Lightning Rift deck was, like, very good. Like, if you open Lightning Rift, you take that card, you make a deck. And all of a sudden you're like, Lay Waste is awesome! Like, all these cards in Cycle are awesome! But you'd never start a draft in Onslaught being like, okay, I'm just going to take all the cycling cards, because eventually
I'm going to find that lightning rift. And then you don't, you're like, oh, well, this sucks.
Have a pile of cycly garbage. Everyone's like, what did you do? That kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's better that way.
Another good example is the Dampened Thought deck.
That's why some of us play bigger cubes. Variants, yes. Variants.
The David Thought deck from Common Gobblblock.
That card was common. It'd be kind of hard to go an entire draft without seeing one, but it was really hard to draft it with just one.
Right.
Yeah, it's closer. You need multiples of that one. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Like, you can't start with just, like, I'm going to take the Fogs and the Consuming Vortexes and nothing else. And then...
Winning!
Yeah.
Not just for creatures.
So, anyway... Don't be afraid of leaving stuff behind, as long as, you know, you should have a balance between consistency decks that have a lot of overlap and redundancy. Good examples being white aggro, black aggro, red aggro, green ramp, blue control, where there's just one, you know, there's the beatdown creature, there's the removal spell, there's the whatever, and there's like 18 variant versions of it. You know, the Landmorels, Findhorn Elves, Noble Hierarch, blah blah blah, Lightning Bolt, Chain Lightning, Burst Lightning.
And that bleeds into the questions of, expectations when randoms sit down to your cube.
Yeah.
What should every Magic player who's comfortable enough to sit down at a cube draft intrinsically know about the format that will apply across the board?
Yeah.
And, you know, that way, you know, people don't get confused and or mad and sad when it's like, but I assumed this card would be here, or I...
I definitely have done that before with other people's cubes. Like...
I always just end up drafting mono red whenever I sit down at somebody's cube that I just have no idea what the fuck's going on.
Right.
And it's like, well, you can't really gut this. No matter what, as long as you're playing red cards, like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, that's why we have a podcast. So hopefully people out there, whenever they sit down at our cube, like, they know.
Yeah.
Oath is a deck.
Tinker is a deck.
That shouldn't be that surprising.
Bizarre Baghdad is a deck.
Kind of, we're working on it.
So, anyway, don't be afraid. Just be mindful of, don't run, you don't want to run 100% cute 1-2-3 card interaction narrow stuff. You don't want to, cube and full of Oath of Druids, Tinkers.
We're still working on cutting down on that because again, we like those decks, we like those strategies, but if it's not...
They gotta have some overlap.
Exactly.
Like, Oath and Tinker are great examples of niche, like, need one card to work strategies that have a lot of overlap because, like, both those decks want the Bloodsteel Colossus and the Inkwell Leviathan and the Sundering Titan. Like,
these are all reasons why I'm glad we play Oath.
Yeah. You know, cards like Reanimator, you know, want the graveyard stuff that also, like, potentially the Bizarre deck wants or the, you know, just different stuff like that. Like, you gotta have as much overlap as possible, I think, to justify a number of the one card built around means that may or may not show up.
One other question we've got, what triggered the decision to bring back Curdape and Friends? 15 Fetchlands probably has a lot to do with it, I'd say. more rotisserie drafting, and thusly people actively drafting Zoo could have a little bit to do with it. Lowering the casting cost on the colors in general, which is something we're still working on. Those are all things that led back to it. I know we, like, we did a tearful goodbye to Curdape on the show in the past.
And then he came right back. It was like a Hulk Hogan retirement. He was out of action for 3 months.
Curdape rips off the shirt.
Yeah. I am fine with the cat package. My whole thing was...
Package or no package.
Right.
No,
it's one-offs. All of, it's all or nothing. It's you want all those dudes or you want none of those dudes. So right now we're on all those dudes and that's fine. You know, we got the Tribal Flames in there.
Tribal Flames, I always feel like is a classic. Has it improved Zoo decks? I think it brought back Zoo decks. I don't think that...
Yeah, Zoo wasn't really a thing. Zoo got kind of very, very much trumped by Mono Red.
I think very few people drafted Naya. While those cards.
Because it was just like, why would you not just draft, if you're gonna draft aggro, why not just draft Mono Red?
You were, well, I mean, it's not really Mono Red, but you were rewarded more for playing one, maybe two colors, than there being any rewards for playing three or more colors. And I think we can have our cake here and eat it too. I think you can have both decks.
Yeah.
This kind of comes back to bigger cube philosophy over all the years. I've mentioned this on the show before where, the original Wizards of the Coast cube, which in many ways is the impetus of cube drafting, was very monocolor-centric. And the decks, if you go back to the Invitational where they did the cube drafting, there's a bunch of monocolor decks. And they're kind of cool. I mean, they remind me of, you know, Mono Black in the Torment days. They remind me of Mono White in the Tempest days. They remind me of Mono Red in the Too Many days. And Mono Blue in the Tempest days as well. Not a lot of dual lands back in those days. Those are great decks, but I also, you know, have played through the history of Magic where there were fun 3 to 5 color decks, and we enjoyed the early days of cubing where 5 color dragons was what was drafted.
All that was drafted.
It's hard to find a perfect marriage of, yeah, sit down or cube. You could draft any of one color, you could draft any of the 2 color combinations, or you could draft 3 to 5 color decks.
I think at this point, if I were to draft in our cube, at least, we're at a place where if I had to draft a completely random color or color combination, like a random number of colors, and then the colors themselves were further randomized.
Okay.
They're all within the realm of viability.
4-color non-green is probably like the worst.
It's the hardest. But it's like a very hard control deck.
And like red, white, black is obviously an
attack. I like red. Red, white, black was my first rotisserie draft deck.
Oh, I was saying booster draft.
Oh, I mean, again, they're hard. They're harder to do. But you like, could absolutely...
Bant is a real deck. Naya is a real deck, obviously.
Grixis is a real deck.
Jund is a real deck.
All America.
Yeah, actually, that's a real deck. I drafted that yesterday.
All 2-color combinations, 5-color, all 1-color decks.
Like, here's the thing, is like, any 4-plus color combination that includes green, you're covered.
You're fine.
You're covered, you've got it.
Any of the 3-color combinations that include green are fine.
Yeah.
Any of the, you know...
Esper Control is very classic.
Yeah.
The Dromar's Charm is still represented. And again, you know, it's that's the goal. I mean, that's the achievement that is possibly unachievable, possibly is. Who knows if all of Magic will be able to present us that, but I would like to be able to create a cube where you could sit down, draft a single color deck, have it be cohesive, have it have these synergies, have it be sweet. You could draft any of the two color combinations, thusly do so, and open the door to 3 to 5 color strategies. I wish, segueing over to Cube Tutor, which is a spectacular resource. Definitely if you stop by the blog for the podcast, ekamon.blogspot.com, we have a link out to the Cube Tutor page out there. Definitely check out all the useful information there, including the very useful visual spoiler. It actually shows you what's there. But,
We are cube number 1141. Also, if you get a cube
that tutor. Many more people were on the ball before us. Yeah. That's what you should really learn. So there are cube stats in Cube Tutor, and they're pretty cool. Like, they'll tell you, the number of times a card has been picked, the number of times a card has been passed, and it'll give you, like, the top 20 entries of both sides. In theory, that information would be amazing. The problem is that it kind of resets every time a card comes in or out. So it's like Curdade, for example. You had it in the
cube. It doesn't remember.
Yeah, it doesn't remember. It's like a brand new Curdade. Like it's, yeah. You flickered it and the entire game does not remember, what it was, prior. So, because of that, the stats portion of it still is a little bit to be desired. But it's a great function. I mean, definitely, again, if you're not familiar with everything a Cube Tutor offers, definitely go check it out. We're not the first location to endorse it at such a high level, but, it is great as a great use resource for us. We're almost breaking 1,100 drafts on there.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty nice. Like, stats page. I'm not usually logged in as him, so I don't, or logged in at all, really. So I don't really get to see any of this stuff. But, yeah, that's super cool. Super cool. We're winding down here. We're almost at the end of the show. What else you got for us, Eck?
Well, I don't know.
maybe nothing.
It might be nothing.
Maybe nothing. Did we adequately covered 6 weeks of non-podcasting as far as the cube world goes? I'm sure there's something we're horribly overlooking that people will tell us about days after this goes up.
Minutes, actually. Mere minutes.
What cards on the bottom picks portion would you cut if you had to cut 5?
Okay, so Cube Tutor Analysis has top picks and bottom picks for drafting. So top picks are basically what you'd expect. Black Lotus, Soul Ring, Recall, yada, yada, yada. The bottom picks are the interesting ones, because
A lot of them are
new cards, because it freaks out.
well, so it's more likely that things are going to get passed versus picked.
Ignoring cards that are brand new because they don't have enough data. The bottom picks are Sliver Queen, Rune of the Hidden Realm, Giant Growth, Bor Umbra, Maelstrom Wanderer, Kezzik Wulfrun, Jinx Choker, Coiling Oracle, Seal of Primordium, Ankh of Mishra.
We get the picture.
What of these would you cut if you had to cut anything?
Well, if you didn't notice on that proposed change list coming up, we have Giant Growth.
Giant Growth is already gone.
Well, it's not already gone. It's on.
It's
most likely on the way out.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
The dead man walking.
Which is sad because today that card has been awesome.
Specifically today.
Specifically today. In the microcosm that has been drafting today. We've already talked about cutting Vithian Renegades, which is also on this list. I think
Bor Umbra is...
Back off my Bor Umbra.
Whoa.
I think a lot of it does happen naturally. A lot of cards on this list, people will definitely question quite regularly. Like, hey, Jogglehop's Devastation, what's that all about? And it's like, well, I don't think people are really onto those decks, or they don't happen that often, and...
I try to draft those decks.
Form of the Dragons on that list right there. We're just talking about cutting that. Does this list go any further? No, we're at the bottom. So cutting 5 and being like super cheaty about it.
There are definitely some ones that are surprising to me. Seal of Primordium, I feel, being a very low pick, I guess just because people think of it as a sideboard card.
Sure. Or like there's just randomly Raging Ravine on here.
Yeah.
Coiling
Oracle. What's wrong with Coiling Oracle, guys?
Nothing. What's right about Coiling Oracle?
Everything. That card is value.
But it's like Raging Ravine. It's like none of the other Zendikar dual lands or like man lands are on there. Like,
yeah.
Just randomly.
What's wrong with Raging Ravine? It's one of the better ones. Like, what's the problem?
I agree. Like, where does that data come from? Chameleon Colossus is a little meh. Like Savage Lands is on here?
Well, yeah, there's some weird
stuff. Who doesn't live all these duels?
Or Spiritmonger also.
Spiritmonger's a card we could probably cut, but I don't
want to
have that.
Fireman Avenger is a card I want to cut. Red-white options are slim.
Yeah.
We've tried a lot of them over time.
Yeah. Everyone's always like, Boros Ragnarok. Boros Ragnarok.
But, I mean, yes, but that's a white card or a red card by our system.
Ding.
I need a gold card better than Fireman Avenger.
Additional ding. Not Aurelius Fury.
So, yeah. Oh, poor Aurelius Fury. So anyway, I think Boros Reckoner should go in. It probably will go in on this next change list. We gotta figure out what it will be, but it can go in. Fireman Avenger, however, we need a new...
If it was that, he'd cut Hearthcoming.
Yeah. Well, what I'm hoping for is it turning to Nyx because we're getting the enemy pair gods, right?
I guess.
Well, so I'm hoping...
I'm not the authority on that.
I'm hoping that, like, the red... Because we're getting, like, the red-white...
Sure.
God and, red-white like, that god. Stuff.
The god of lightning helixes.
Yeah. If the red-white god is any good or he's got some followers that are decent, I'm hoping that we can get something for that. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's a good thing Zach doesn't make the changes. He put Kiora's follower in the queue.
I want to try Kiora.
I'm not impressed.
How can you say that? We've never played her.
I'm just not impressed as a magic card. That's what I was trying to say.
Just on paper?
Yeah.
I think giving her a shot's fine.
Yeah.
I would, at least on a trial basis, swap her for Mystic Snake.
I've voiced my opinion on that matter.
Yeah.
I feel like there's so many questions that come up during the weeks, so and we never have the chance to cast, that we're just not covering stuff. I know as soon as we get off this cast, we... sit down a draft, and we're going to be like, as soon as I look at the first card, we'll be like, I forgot to talk about that. But I guess that's the reason why we come back to cast again. We will try. You know, I've been flirting with the idea of just doing audio, so we don't have to get together every week, and the schedule will be a little bit easier. But I like the live interactions. Obviously, like being able to do this. It's very helpful for our cast.
That's
For those of you listening after the fact, I just fondled X's face.
I need an adult.
regardless.
Without questions. Is there a new schedule or just holding out for a new time frame?
Life. It is busy. It is hard. You know, ever since Eck has become the world of the day employed.
I live in a cubicle, so it's hard for me to get out and record on a regular basis.
Do you think you could accurately? No. Do you think you could just cast from your cubicle? You think you can do that? Is it too loud over there?
I can't imagine that would go over well.
Are you like butt to butt with people that are like wondering what the hell you'd be doing?
Right. Like you can't like have like a conversation without it being overheard.
I would just use that to my advantage.
Well, it'd be a little weird if I'm just like, I think this is about magic cards.
Considering the people you work with, it seems like the topic of conversation.
Well, that's only half of the people.
Oh.
The other half is the HR department. So it's not.
You guys share like a bigger office?
Yeah, we share like a.
So how do all the tech, like why don't the tech nerds try to like pick up on the HR chicks?
Because they're like 60?
Oh, we need some fresh blood in the HR department over where Eck works.
Anyway, this got weird. we try and the weekends are pretty much the only time we can really do it now.
The weekends are easiest for us right now. I mean, again, like now to find off all these rotisserie drafts, I feel like we're getting together every Saturday to draft.
The weekends are also the most awkward time because that's the most likely that other shit's going on.
Like an important sporting event that delayed us from broadcasting this evening.
Or we're going to Las Vegas.
What we should do is we should broadcast from Las Vegas.
Just the day, just like pick a really hungover day. Yeah.
There'll be no lighting. You won't really be able to hear us. The voices will be gone. It'll be a little growly.
We'll like put the microphone in like the door in between the two rooms. And that way neither of us have to get out of bed.
Eck is such a boss travel agent that it's like, this is the first time you've like ever done this. He coordinated our flights. He called and linked our hotel rooms. It's all, like, he's, like, mad that he's, like, it's so annoying at the end of the night everyone has to, like, go different directions. Like, you're in this tower and you're in this tower.
I hate it.
I was like, I'm used to hanging out with people who are in, like, four different hotels. Fuck different tower. Right, and
it's so fucking stupid. It took 3 seconds. I emailed them one time. Just, these are the names.
It's just funny.
Put the rooms
together. Our little Eck is becoming an adult who really likes having these things in order. Also, if you're in the Las Vegas area, St. Patrick's Day-ish will be in that area. I'm debating whether or not to do kind of a Las Vegas-style meetup for people that we know that are down in that area to play Magic. If you happen to be someone who listens to this who is in the area, would find your way into that area at that time.
We gotta keep track going.
Oh, definitely. I'm seriously considering it. Wives and girlfriends will be plenty distracted.
I wonder if we brought the cube down to, like, the poker room.
Unacceptable.
You don't think unacceptable. That we can let us use a table?
No. Remember that time that we were drafting on top of a poker table at a casino and they got really mad at us?
Yeah,
that actually happened.
Well, what if we just pay them?
Then we're idiots.
Are we? Yes. Are we idiots?
Granted, table space is, like, impossible to find in Las Vegas.
That's what I'm saying. Well-lit table space with bar service? Hard to beat.
Here's the thing about Las Vegas, is you can't just play games of your own accord there.
Yeah.
Because then every eye in the sky is going to be like, what are those guys doing? Are they some kind of wagering? What's our cut in that? All right, cut that shit off.
Well, that's why I was like, maybe just here's a $50.
Just call up the Bellagio and be like, all right, we'll come in around
It's like getting them to spread you a game of poker. Just be like,
it's kind
of
like that.
You don't have to give us a dealer. Here's $100. Leave us alone.
It's kind of like that, only they control things as opposed to not understanding what's going on.
I know.
This is the...
It'd be funnier if they were like, excuse me, sir, the eye of this guy told me that you're very dumb for passing chase. Why didn't you move on, Mono Red, there, sir?
Look, we'll just...
You missed lethal damage. You have to come with us.
We'll just set up a draft by the Hooters pool.
Oh, do it. Now the cards have herpes.
Well, let's dispense with the pleasantries. Where can people find you on the internet, Ek, when they want to tell you about their Las Vegas plans in March?
Ekamon.blogspot.com.
Good website.
Twitter, @YoungMecca. I post on Reddit sometimes. I am Ekamon. I'm on twitch.tv/Ekamon. Follow, friend.
We're whatever. So close to 300 little hearts. I don't know what they call them on this. Followers. There we go.
Little hearts.
Well, it's different from Twitter and different from YouTube.
Yeah, I know. They're all separate.
So, you know, do us a favor if you're listening to this after the fact and
follow MTG Cast.
You can still find us on MTG Cast. We have not completely disintegrated that bridge. Ooh, iTunes. Definitely write a review on iTunes about how stupid we are.
Yeah,
that is very helpful, as long as it has 5 stars. So just 5 stars.
5 stars, call it jerk.
These guys are stupid. Yeah. That's really what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So we've got that going on for us. You can find me at Tristan Gregson on Twitter. You can email the show directly at draftcube@gmail.com.
You can also leave comments on the ekamon.blogspot.com site, and I get them directly and can respond.
That is it looks like a ghost town there, although it is used quite often for trafficking. It's this great, like, go-between for, like, here's the cube list, here's the cube tutor list.
Right, it's more like a reference page than a blog.
Here are the last episodes that you can then reference and download. Yeah.
All the links to the episodes are there, and all of the cube changes get put there for the most part. And the links to, like, the cube list, the skeleton cube list.
Still need to update that.
The on-deck cube, I think, is on there.
Yeah, but that was like a one shot. That was
yeah,
like,
that's out of date.
Yeah, that's just like now it's just like here's some magic cards.
Why not?
Do what you will with that information.
I'm gonna just name some branded things so you could just you take it, leave it, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway. No, I did just miss the whole episode. Yeah, we've been on for almost 2 hours, man.
Yeah, you're gonna have to rewind. Don't worry, it'll be highlighted and uploaded. And...
Yeah, I mean, the way Ek does these things is like, you can literally zip back and then spend the next 2 hours. We're also working on getting Jay Bouchon on the show. Obviously, this connection tied in.
I might be on Turn 1 Magic.
There we go.
I had spoken with Ek a couple
doing
of
a guest spot. Turn1magic.com?
I think so.
It's not .org.
.edu.
Those guys really like cubing. I think they just started a podcast recently. It's hard to tell because I'm pretty sure they just turn a mic on and then like talk about cube at each other.
Yeah.
It could use some refinement. Thankfully they called up the best. So.
During the rotisserie draft, anyone can view it and anyone can comment and there's like a chat box so they're asking questions. So I was having a conversation with one of the guys from there and he's like, oh, do a show. Like,
you're talking to the wrong guy. If you want to see or hear me on Heavy Meta, you got to talk to those guys. They have not optioned my contract. I am still freelancing at this point. Again, I feel like I'm pretty cheap. I'm not expensive to get, but for each their own. That's also unfortunate. Those guys run such a short show. I will be guesting on MTG Pulpery at some point. My good friend Tom Gustafson and the great Adam Staborski and the almost as great Connolly Woods are doing a great show over there now. For those of you that aren't familiar with any of the names I've just mentioned, that would be surprising. Those of you that aren't familiar with Tom's name, he was formerly the greatest host of Monday Night Magic. He's a great Magic host. And Adam Staborski is a spectacular guy who is also content manager for GatheringMagic.com, so you know those guys know what they're talking about. And they also have Connolly Woods, who is the consummate entertainer. So I don't know when that's going to happen, but I have been slotted to get on their show. It's going to be a little while. Other than that, you know, again,
I think that's it. I mean,
Heavy Meta, I will get back to them. You know, I would, I am not opposed to having a more permanent role on their show. I just don't think they're ready to add more Canadian prowess to their website.
They can't handle it?
No.
They can't handle the Crown Royal with Maple?
Ugh, it's not good.
I thought that was the funniest damn thing. We're watching the Maple Leafs, Canadiens hockey game in the Canadian feed, and it's sponsored by Crown Royal Canadian Whiskey with maple syrup in it, and literally is the most Canadian thing I've ever seen in my life.
Enjoy that. If you go back in the archives, we actually need to go back in our archives, because we are like halfway through a few different series for episodes.
All the color reviews are done.
Two color combinations. Back when Ravnica came out, we did shows about each of the guilds and how they apply to Cube. We were doing a monocolor series that we did not finish.
I thought we did. Pretty sure we did.
Pretty sure we didn't.
Yep, agree to disagree.
Or $5 says we didn't.
I don't want to look.
That's dedication right there. Yeah. That is your show host and producer.
Take that.
Taking the extra mile to know what we've done and what we haven't done.
That doesn't matter.
I know. It's going to be a lot of Crown Royal with maple syrup later. And Eck will finally look it up.
We have maple syrup in the house. We can just do that.
I think I know what we're doing for the rest of the evening.
Let's get to it.
In honor of the Maple Leafs overtime loss to the Canadiens.
We're doing maple shooters. All right.
I had pure maple candy the other day. It is so gross.
All right. On that note, everybody, have a good
Follow
night.
Us on the thing. Favorite us on the other thing. Comment and like wherever there is a thing. And tweet us your questions, comments, concerns, and send all your dick pics to Eck.
Thanks for that.